His Holiness is on page 66, page 67 of the Tibetan text. So His Holiness is, most important thing is to think on the suffering of the conditioned suffering of the conditioned body. So this section is on the suffering, and so we are on the subheading which says, at the time of death, nothing else but only Dharma can help. So this is so the text is saying, at the time of death, one has to one dies at the time of death, one would be wearing stinking covering, and the so-called friends and dear ones and loved ones surround one, looking at but unable to help you. These friends, your beloved ones, cannot help you but stare at you. And after that, you we have no guarantee as to where we will be born. It's total uncertainty. So, also after death, one's body starts rotting away and smelling, and it will be taken away to the cemetery, and will be either abandoned there, or in today's time will be cremated and turned into ashes. His Holiness now switches to liberation in the palm of your hand. Thank you. So we are basically we are on page 299. Page 300, sorry. It should be page 300, the subheading, the drawback of not practicing seriously. som jag. Anda чего мне дава? Oh, so his honest starts from day 10. Day 10, page 291. Let's read from the beginning of page 292. So, for example, Kampas coming to see Shakyamuni statue in Lhasa Cathedral first leave their homes, arriving finally at the statue. The road leads them here bit by bit. It is impossible for them to skip any part of the way. At this point in Tsongkhapa's main lamrim, he explains why the three Zen practitioners has to be led on the three stages, or the stages with the three beings. It is explained there that it is important to explain bodhicitta from the very beginning, because from the beginning it is important to introduce bodhicitta and show to the practiced disciples that the ultimate aim of the practice is the state of Buddhahood. So if we wait because a teacher or the practitioners wait to understand this, then before one by between the time the practitioner begins practicing and until the time he attains, he sort of reaches that stage to practice bodhicitta, a great time and opportunity is lost for the practitioner to train himself in this mind of bodhicitta and in sort of correcting his motivation. Shantideva says in the engage. His son has already passed that. So in the small and medium scope sections of the lamrim, you must focus on achieving Buddhahood for the sake of sentient beings. Okay, here, this is what His Holiness was referring to. Developing bodhicitta is the actual practice. The small and medium scope parts of the path are preliminaries to developing bodhicitta. You may be wondering, in that case, it must be sufficient to teach the great scope from the outset. I doubt that the so-called small and medium are needed. There are two reasons for discussing all three. There are people who cannot train their minds in the great scope initially, so they need to practice in stages through the small and the medium scopes. This approach is more beneficial for people with good, mediocre, or inferior minds. Also, without some familiarity with the entire part of the path, you will have, His Holiness says, getting an understanding and attaining realization is different. Understanding is something you can achieve right from the beginning, whereas attaining the realization is something you attain, you achieve later on through meditative training. This approach is more beneficial for people with good, mediocre, and inferior minds. Also, without some familiarity with the earlier parts of the path, you will have no renunciation at all in your mind stream. So you need to defeat any pride you may have about being a Mahayanist or follower of the sacred tantras. To develop bodhicitta, which is the actual practice, you need to develop such compassion that you simply cannot bear others being tormented by suffering. But in order to develop this compassion, you must know exactly how you yourself are plagued by suffering. And you must understand that the whole of samsara is by nature suffering. But first, you must fear the lower realms, for without this, you will have no repudiation of celestial and human happiness. You must therefore train your mind in the small and the medium scope parts of the path. This training is like the foundations and, well, wall supports of a house. We have not yet achieved advanced results like previous practitioners. J. Milarepa trained in the common path under Marpa, and many of his songs are about his development of these realizations. And you need the lamrim to make the specially rapid progress promised by the sacred tantras. This is the implication of the names the easy path and the swift path. That Milarepa achieved the unification in one lifetime was not due to Tantra alone. He had already trained in the path of three scopes in former lives. In one former life, for example, he was the Kadamba Chakti Chaticho, as said in the introduction to mind training. All the people who embark on the sacred Tantras must have been trained in the shared part of the path beforehand. We did not do this. We embark on the sacred Tantra first. Tantras first did not keep our tantric commitments and thought we meditated on the two stages. They say that many such people will go to the Vajra hell. Yeah, his son is talking about distracted mind. Because if you do analysis, then the power of the analysis automatically sort of force the mind to stay on that subject on which he or she is analyzing, because the person feels kind of interest and enthusiasm due to the subject, and that also helps in sort of bringing the mind from the scattered state to a focused state, because some people, single-pointed meditation, they find it difficult because they feel like the mind keeps on sort of distracting away. And it's kind of hard for such kind of people to practice single-pointed meditation. On the other hand, for such kind of people, sometimes it's better if they do some kind of analytical meditation, because that's due to the enthusiasm and excitement of the subject matter. It helps the mind sort of stay fixed on the subject matter. Also, people who you must be far-sighted from the beginning, His Honor says. His Honor is referring to this statement: compassion, looks at sentient beings, whereas wisdom looks at Buddhahood. If one is too sort of has a very suffocative kind of mind, state of mind, very narrow-minded, or rather, in other words, then that will lead to depression and wind problems. So even in Bodhisattva Charya, if one feels tired, it advises the practitioner to relax and rest. And Khumtar Rinpoche also has said in some of his advices that some practitioners don't practice in such a way that from the day one you wish to attain great scholarship and great realization and walk and strive day and night without resting and relaxing. After 3 days, the person has already felt tired and wanted feel like giving up. So such kind of attitude will not work at all. So it's kind of one should have a long-term strategy in Dharma practice. You must be far-sighted from the text. You must be far-sighted from the beginning. You must feel I am prepared to use my entire human life to pursue just one meditation topic of the Lamrim, but we are far-sighted about worldly things, which is the wrong way around. Lack persistence in worldly things, not the Dharma. If you feel it's impossible not to achieve anything in the Dharma and practice with courage, you will not have to spend a month or a year on a single meditation topic. Geshe Kamapa said, our contemplation achieved nothing. Why do you think that is? Don't lie. You are distracted in the daytime and fall asleep at night. In other words, never mind, I was spending a month on a meditation topic. We have not even meditated on a single topic for the length of a single meditation session. How unrealistic to feel. Even now, I haven't developed realizations. We don't make determined practice our starting point, yet we roll our eyes into the top of our head and pretend to meditate. When we do just one recitation of, for example, His Holiness is saying, when we say I'm doing Dhamma practice, it doesn't mean that you make a small shrine room in your room, in a house, and stay there, sit there, you know, straight and close your eyes. That's not the meaning of Dhamma. Dhamma practice means whether you are awake or sleeping or like walking around or talking or whatever, all the time keep aware of, watch your mind and see whether one is controlling your mind. So therefore, having a good understanding of Dhamma from the right beginning is very, very important, because Even whether you are walking or talking or whatever, even in sleep and dreaming state, you have knowledge of what is to be done and what is not to be done. And that will always sort of help be like a guidance. So Dhamma practice doesn't mean I will do something tomorrow or day after tomorrow, or I will go on a mountain and do it there, or go to Bodh Gaya or something like that. It is something you should do right where you are. We don't make back to the text. Page, let's see where His Holiness is. The next subheading is how to extract the essence from your optimum human rebirth. The next subheading is training your mind in the stages of the path shared with the small scope. The next subheading is developing a yearning for a good rebirth. I think His Holiness already passed all this. The next subheading is recalling that your present rebirth will not last long and that you will die. His Honor says, this is what the text he's reading is talking about. It's talking about lay practitioners about an ideal way of lay practitioner or something like that. The drawbacks, the next subheading is the drawback of not remembering death. The drawback, there are six sections. Page 295. His Holiness is saying somewhere here on page 296, Geshe Potowa said, you cannot saw with a two-pronged needle. If you do not think about that, you will not ignore this life. If you do not ignore this life, you will be controlled by the eight worldly concerns, being happy if you acquire and unhappy if you do not. Being happy if comfortable, and unhappy if not. Happy if famous, and unhappy if not. Happy if praised, unhappy if criticized. Nagarjuna said of these eight, by the eight worldly concerns, we mean the worldly thoughts of acquiring or not, comfort or discomfort, fame or notoriety, praise or criticism. Keep a level head. These are not subjects for your thoughts. Compare this with the story about Geshe Potowa and the offering of turquoise. Lingrepa said, in samsara, the city of preconceptions, wander the zombies of the eight worldly concerns. You are in a terrifying charnel ground. Have your guru perform an exorcism. So ignore this life and devote yourself wholeheartedly to the Dharma. If afterwards you wonder whether you will be able to support yourself, feel that it would be all right even if you cannot, and be prepared to become a pauper. Our teacher left his home and became a homeless monk. He renounced all the wealth of his royal position, wore clothes he found in rubbish heaps, and so on. He devoted himself wholeheartedly to Dharma. He was prepared to become a pauper. Jeremy did the same. But you might wonder, if I become a pauper for devoting myself wholeheartedly to Dhamma, when I die because I will not get any food, you should be prepared to die as a beggar and say to yourself, if I die while undergoing hardships for the sake of Dhamma, then so be it. Should you ignore this life that like that, there are no stories of Dhamma practitioners starving to death after they stopped earning their livelihood. Our kind teacher dedicated to us merits worth 60,000 rebirths as universal emperors so that his followers would not starve to death. Even in times of such famine that pearls have to be bartered for flour. As they say, if the great meditator does not roll down the hill, noodles will roll up to him. Geshe Benguinkin also said, when I was a layman, I wore a sharp sword, arrow, and spear at my belt, but I had many enemies and few friends. When I was a bachelor, I had fields that could yield 40 bushels of wheat, so people gave me the nickname, the 40 bushel bandit. I used to hold up people by day and rob villages at night, but even so, food and clothes were scarce. And my cows give no milk. Now that I practice Dharma, I'm short of neither food nor clothing, and my enemies are at peace. His Honor says, Dharma means, practice means if you can control your afflictive emotion, that is Dharma practice. That is the Buddha Dharma, the practice of Buddha Dharma. Without that, whatever you do, like faith, tolerance, there's no guarantee whether what you are doing will turn to Dharma practice or not. In Madhyamika Avatara, where the Chatakriti refuted birth from others, he has said that we can all see that everything is born from others. That is a convention. Everybody accepts that, especially Buddhist. Everybody believes and accepts that everything exists inherently from the outside of the object itself. If you say it doesn't exist from itself, people will say you are crazy, like you have extreme view, you are a radical or something like that. Self-cherishment and others cherishing others, even in among Christians and other practitioners of other religions, there are people who do that practice very sincerely. So, from the point of view of conduct and actual practice, they have wonderful practice. But what is lacking is the wisdom side. His Holiness is referring to the wisdom of dependent arising emptiness, which is the only antidote for overcoming the afflictive emotion and self-grasping and inherent existence. Page 298. So in the text it says, giving up one's life and practicing impermanence, but His Holiness says mainly it is really, again, emptiness. The meditation on dependent arising. And if you can do that, then meditation on impermanence and those other practices automatically follows. His Holiness is speech on page 299. The criterion for having done this is if you want to be like the 7th Dalai Lama, Gesan Gyatso, or the Benchen Lama, Losan Yishi. The 7th Dalai Lama said that he owned only his Vajra bell and the 3 robes, nothing else. The first Dalai Lama is really a great spiritual master and practitioner. When he was in a very advanced age, he said, now I'm aged and old. As if like he sort of said that in a sort of a rather old, sort of a sad mood to his disciples. And some of his disciples... One of his disciples told him in return, you are the all-knowing omniscient. There's no sadness. There's no doubt that you will get born in the Pure Land. And then in answer, the first Dalai Lama said, I have no wish to get born in the Pure Land. I have just wish to get born in samsara, where there's more suffering and where there's more pain and where sentient beings, I can serve sentient beings the most. This is real great Dharma practice. This is, that's, I used to feel, you know, this, if a real Dharma practice means something like that, he's really great. We might not necessarily crave for all, and there's a story about story. I'm in the text again, and there's a story that even an offering of 100 ingots of silver did not please the Panchen Lama Losang Yishi. We might not necessarily crave for all three: food, clothing, and reputation. Some of us may be fettered by just one of them, others by two, others indeed by all three. But the hardest of the three to abandon is the desire for reputation. Many peoples, no matter who they are, scholars, monks, teachers, meditators, who want a good reputation or to be famous, Dogen Rinzin, Ger Troegombo said, in this life you may be a scholar, monk, a great meditator, but you want to be called a scholar or a monk. You may place a notice on your door that you are in retreat. You may be a great meditator who shuns other people, but great meditator of this life, you want people to call you great meditator. Even the offerings you make to the three jewels are made only to be seen by others. Some people fancy themselves as great meditators or adepts. They give up food, clothes, and foods and food and clothes, and work hard at such austerities as taking only the essence of flowers or pebbles. Yet people who deep down have absolutely no desire for reputation are rare. Geshe Potowa's analogy said, the fox and monkey lurk near the doorstep of the gurus. In other words, instead of examining the fiery pit that lies on your own doorstep, you explore faraway places. That is, you explore the higher paths, the Buddha levels, Tantra, and so forth, while not noticing your craving for this life's trivia. You are not free of these fetters. This is one of the drawbacks of not recollecting death. Page 300, the drawbacks of not practicing seriously. If you do not recollect that, you will not practice Dharma seriously, nor will you be able to practice continually. At present, we do not have the great perseverance in our vicious practices. We only practice until we get bored. Our not recollecting death and impermanence is the blame, because Geshe Kara Gomchung recollected impermanence. He never even got around to cutting down the thorn bush on his doorstep. Milarepa used to wear pieces of cloth and barley flower sacks, and when they eventually fell to pieces, he did not even bother to sew them together. He did virtuous practices instead. If we were to have a similar recollection of impermanence, we would not strive hard at other activities. We worked hard at virtuous practices and not feel downhearted each time we started. We would be only too glad to do them. The drawbacks of acting vulgarly. The next subheading is the drawback of having to die with regrets. Page 301. The next subheading is the advantages of remembering death. There are six of these. The advantages of being most beneficial. I think His Holiness is right here. When Yung Tumpa's benefactor died, this inspired Milarepa to practice Dharma. Many of the great adepts used to hold skull cups, trumpets made of human thigh bones, and so on, to improve the awareness of death and impermanence. The Vinaya speaks of keeping drawings of skeletons in bathhouses and like for the same reason. Geshe Jingawa said, if you do not do at least one meditation session on impermanence in the morning, I think you will devote the whole day to this life. B. His Honor says, have tea first. Page 303. If you recall the advantage of being most powerful, if you recall death and impermanence, they say you will. Okay. I think His Holiness is a little bit on page 301. His Holiness says, once I went to Thailand and went visited a monastery, and in that sort of porch in front of the temple, they have put a sort of a something like a camera or something like a video. You can look through the lens and see. So in that, they show scenes of a dead person's body going through the decaying process. First day, second day, like that. First the body itself, then after 2 days, 3 days, 3 days, like that. And I found that, like a wonderful example. In our own tradition, we have this practice of putting a huge picture, painting the wheel of samsara in front of outside the gate of the monasteries. That's a very good practice also. In Tibet, we have this tradition some sort of similar practice of putting up similar paintings. That's also good. And then we also have this tradition of putting paintings of the four guardians of the four guardian deities, like the Vaishravanas, like Kukuvera, like that. That is kind of useless and meaningless. That's probably a Chinese tradition and came from the Chinese culture. This one says, just by meditating on impermanence, it's really hard to overcome afflictive emotion and afflictive emotions and things like desire, etc. That's very difficult. Impermanence meditation alone cannot have that power. That power. His Holiness is page 303, I think so. His Holiness is referring to this line here. Under this heading, the advantage that you will die happily and gladly, which reads, at death you will have the confidence that comes from practicing Dharma faultlessly and be like a son returning to his father's household. Longdu Lama Rinpoche said, I am not afraid of being impermanent. I will be an old monk in the morning and get the body of a god that night. His Holiness says, that's slightly poorer than what the first Dalai Lama said, which His Honor has already mentioned a little bit earlier. Back to the text. So the best Dharma practitioners are happy to die. The middling die gracefully. The least have no regrets. They will feel, I managed to practice, page 304, Dharma well. It will be easy for me to die now and have no regrets. As Jer Milarepa said, I fled to the mountains because I feared death. I have realized emptiness, the mind's primordial state. Were I to die now, I have no fear. Next subheading, the actual way to remember death. This has two sections, the nine-part meditation on death, meditation on the aspect of death. Not even the early Kadambas had this detailed treatment. It consists of instructions taken from Jetsongkhapa's work. These works have many unique, profound, and detailed instructions. They contain the thoughts of the classical Indian treatises on Tantra. They have special points drawn from Tsongkhapa's own experience. Their headings are not in the muddle, and so forth. Next up, heading the 9-part meditation on death. This has three roots. One, thinking of the inevitability of death. Two, thinking about the uncertainty of when you will die. Three, thinking of how nothing can help you when you die except Dhamma. Three reasons are given for each route, making 9 parts in all. Next heading. The first route, thinking about the inevitability of the death. The first of the three reasons given for this is... the first reason, the Lord of Death will inevitably come and no circumstances at all can prevent this. Inevitably, you will die. No matter what sort of body you have, no matter where you go, no matter what method you employ, you cannot stop the Lord of Death. Not even a sound body will stop him. The sayings of the Buddha on impermanence tells us. Page 305, if all, even the Buddhas, Pratyek Buddhas, and Shavaka disciples of Buddha, abandon their bodily remains, need I speak of ordinary beings? In other words, when we now tell stories about the Bhagavan Buddha who achieved the Vajra body and about the many adepts of India and Tibet who achieved the unification, it might seem that they are still with us, yet they have gone to Nirvana. If no common appearances, our teacher Buddha and others have died and their Vajra bodies have been destroyed, why should people like ourselves not die? When our teacher was about to pass into Nirvana, many tens of thousands of his retinue, Shariputra and others, went before him into Nirvana. Then Buddha, our teacher, while in Kushinagari, commanded that his last sleeping platform be built between two salad trees. He then subdued his last two disciples, Pramudita, the king of the celestial musicians, and the Brahmin priest, Subhadra, who was not a Buddhist. They could not bear to see the Buddha pass into Nirvana, and Subhadra immediately passed away himself. When our teacher was just about to pass away, he removed his upper garments and urged people to take a good look, because it was difficult to get to see the body of Tathagata. His last teaching centered on impermanence. Then, in order to show that this meditation was fundamental, he said, "All conditioned phenomena are impermanent. This is the last teaching of the Tathagata." He then passed away into Nirvana. When most of the arhats who had achieved partial and complete karmic freedom understood what had happened, they too passed away. Their number was one short of 500. Moreover, Indian pundits like the seven hierarchs of the teaching, the 80 great adepts, the 6 ornaments, the 2 supreme ones, and so forth, and in Tibet, Chandrakshita, Acharya Padmasambhava, and Dharmaraja, Tisun Devzin, Adisha, and his disciples, Manjushri's embodiment, Lord Tsongkhapa, and his disciples, and so forth, have all passed into Nirvana. Now only their reputations remain. How could we escape death? When Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche, a tutor to the Dalai Lama, gave him Lamrim teachings, they say there were many thousands in the audience. Now not one of these lamas are disciples and or disciples is still alive. And they say Chusan Lama Rinpoche and others gave teachings very like our present one at this very spot. Now only the reputation remains. In a mere 100 years, all those sitting in this assembly will be dead, and the only remnant will be the report that something had happened. The report that if after remnants will be reported that something had happened on this spot. If after only 100 years, all the people now in the Southern Continent, in China, in Tibet, Mongolia, and so forth, even the babies born today are sure to be dead, and not one left alive, then no better karmic results awaits us. Likewise, if your time has come, there is no place that will not mean death for you. The sayings of the Buddha on impermanence tells us, wherever you stay, there will be no place that does not mean your death. Not in the sky, not in the sea, not even if you stay in the mountains. Once Prince Virudaka, King Prasenajit's son, intended to slaughter the Shakyas, Mudgalyayana, the thought to use his miraculous powers to cast Virudaka and his army beyond the iron mountains that enclosed this world. But Buddha said it was impossible to stop them. Some Shakya men and women were concealed inside the Dakota's begging bowl. Some were put inside the palace in the sun. But even those Shakyas were still killed. And that day was such that they were going to die. Running away, bribery, falls, etc. will all be quite useless from the sayings of the Buddha. Anyone with the five clairvoyant powers of great rishis be able to go far into the sky cannot go to a place that this is not under the death's jurisdiction. In other words, if feeling could free you from death, then having miraculous powers or the five clairvoyant powers of the rishis would be sufficient to run from the Lord of Death. But even such people cannot escape and will die. Even force cannot stop the Lord of Death. The most powerful lion can defeat elephants by clawing their heads. But when death comes, lions die with their claws drawn in. Even a powerful universal emperor must die, or his power cannot help. We tore up our beloved wealth and property, and we propose that these things will be enough to bribe the Lord of Death. But if, as they say, he cannot be bribed with the precious jewels of universal emperor, how can we speak of other people bribing him? In the instruction given to the King Sutra, we find, suppose there are four great mountains in the four cardinal directions. They are firm, stable, and with solid cores, or are uncracked, indestructible, extremely hard, uniformly dense. They touch the sky and thrust into the ground. On they come, grinding all to power, all grass, trees, twigs, branches and leaves, all animals, insects and elements. They cannot be stopped by fleeing, by force, by wealth, by substances, mantras or medicines. Great King, the four great terrors are similarly coming. They cannot be stopped by fleeing, by force, by wealth, by substances, mantras or medicines. What are those four? What are these four? Old age, sickness, decay and death. Great King, old age will come and destroy you in your prime. Sickness will come and destroy your health. Decay will come and destroy all your splendor. Death will come and destroy your life force. These four will not be pacified or placated by fleeing, by force, by wealth, by substance, by mantras or medicines. In other words, if the four great firm and swift moving mountains were to come from the four cardinal directions and crash together, they would pulverize grass, trees, and so forth. They would be difficult, nomad. So his son says, you have to meditate on the three main points, nine reasonings, and three resolutions. So when you meditate on the, you have to visualize death, and think on the answer that death will definitely come. When it will come, there's no certainty. And the time of death, nothing but only Dharma can help. So if you think in according to this process, it's more effective, and the mind will feel more inspired and moved through these steps. His Holiness is on page 311. Page 311. Some people, something I will not die because I am not ill. Even this is not definite. Patients may be confined to their beds and yet not die. While many healthy people die sudden deaths, some people die in the middle of a meal without ever having had the slightest premonition that they would die. Before they had finished eating, some people present at large ceremonies in a monastery went to the temple on their own 2 feet, only to be carried out by others as corpses on a stretcher. Many government officials draw up grand political programs but never get round to carrying them out because they die before completing their work. In many saints' collected works, the notation left unfinished appears. They were able to compose only the title along with some fragments of verses and died before finishing. From among the relatives and friends who surround us in our valley, we can say that so and so has died, but we do not think this will happen to me. We treat it merely as an object of curiosity. We even hear people say, he has a nice saffron robe. He is hoping I get it next. Such a death will definitely strike you down at some point, though when is uncertain, as they say. There's no telling which will come first, tomorrow or next, your next rebirth. Do not put effort into tomorrow's plans. It is right to work hard for your next life. From the sayings of the Buddha, some of the many people you see in the morning, you will not see in the evening. Some of the many people you see in the evening, you will not see in the morning. How can you be so sure that you will not die tomorrow? So let's go on to the next subheading. The next subheading is the second reason when you will die is uncertain, because there are many factors contributing towards your death and few towards your life. The third reason, when you will die is uncertain, because the body is extremely fragile. The second reason when you will die is uncertain, because there are many factors contributing towards your death and few towards your life. We are now, the text reads, we are now protected by our past prayers, our merits, and the Buddha's compassion. There are besides a great many contributory factors towards our death, like flies buzzing around rotten meat, 80,000 different types of hindering spirits, factors contributing to death surround us. They wonder, when can we eat you? When can we take your breath from you? The 404 types of disease swarm around us like a fog. 360 types of evil spirits, the 15 great evil spirits who attack children, the 360 devouring spirits, and so forth, are greedy for our lives. You do not just have these external contributory factors. If you put 4 snakes into a container, the strongest snake will eat the rest. If the humors such as wind, bile, and phlegm, or the 4 elements get a little bit out of balance, this cannot be a contributing factor towards your losing life. Many more factors contribute to your death. Very few contribute to your life. And even those all contribute to your death. Therefore, always practice Dharma. Not only are there many internal and external contributory factors to death, but many of the factors contributing to life may also contribute to death. Houses can collapse, roads can break up, overturn, horses can buck and trample you, your friends can trick you, food can disagree with you, and so on. Many things can act as contributory factors towards death. Our life force is like a butter lamp in a draft. As Nagarjuna says, we live surrounded by the factors of the Lord of Death, like an old oiled lamp in a draft. Next heading. The third reason when you will die is uncertain, because the body is extremely fragile. Uh, Dishonest is talking about how death occurs, how the breath, the last breath, how the last breath is sort of occurs, and the person sort of the dissolution starts happening. In other words, when you go to sleep, the inhalation and exhalation of your coarse breathing is suppressed, and the subtle wind element can move freely in your nostrils. How amazing that you do not die when you resume your breathing of the coarse wind element. Think about this. When you die, as die is uncertain. This is like being certain that an enemy is coming to kill you, but not knowing when. That from today on, you will try to stop him. That then you should feel that you must practice Dharma now. If you want to practice Dharma, but instead have some work that will last this year and or the next year, and you think, I will practice Dharma after I finish the work, you are deceiving yourself. Gondar Rinpoche said, it seems this work will only take a month or a year. When it's finished, then I will practice pure Dharma. This thought is the demon that tricks everybody. We feel I will practice Dharma after I finish this or that project, but unfinished work is like the old man's mustache. The more it's cut, the more it grows. In other words, you never have time to finish one project, then another project comes, and so you need to go get that done. Then there will be another, and you will think, I'll just finish this. Worldly work is like a river. It never stops, as Gondar Rinpoche said. The great rest is before the tomorrow when you are going to practice Dharma comes. Before the tomorrow when you are, the motivation and the goal makes a difference here. When we are those who are in business, if we are too much attached, and we need financial progress, there are seven billion out of the 7 billion, most are poor. We cannot say just pray to improve your financial condition. That's useless. That's not right. Sorry, my FM stopped working. So there's a lot of corruption in the world and a lot of big gap between rich and poor. So we cannot ignore financial economic progress. We need economy. We need economic progress. But we should aim that for the welfare, for the general humanity. So even if those who, His Honest is saying, those who are working in the financial sector, or rather in business career, it's all right to be doing that, but it's good if you can sort of deep down have this motivation to help, to be of service to humanity through your through this career. Gondar Rinpoche said, the great risk is before the tomorrow when you are going to practice Dharma comes. The time for you to die will come today. So do not let your head be turned. If you would practice Dharma, do it from today. If you put things off and say, when this is finished, I will practice Dharma and I will practice Dharma tomorrow, the work will never be finished. But the day when you are ready to die will surely strike like lightning. Think over the three reasons why it is uncertain when you will die, and right away from where you will abandon worldly works and decide to waste no time in practicing Dharma. But there is no need for students in monastery to interrupt their studies or group debating practice and go off to some mountain cave. Instead, you must convert such Dharma you do now into real Dharma. Suppose formerly you only recited the words of texts. You may have recited the words, until enlightenment, I will take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly thousands of times. But check if you have probably thought over the verse even once. You will see that you have rarely done so. No matter what effort you put into business, farming, or so forth, they will never turn into Dharma. But those of you who are ordained must convert what we do into Dharma, it's a pity if we don't normally practice Dharma. It's no pity if we merely do not know facts. The next heading, is the third root, thinking of how nothing can help when you die except Dharma. The first reason, the wealth cannot help you. Let me catch up with His Holiness. The next subheading is the second reason: friends and relatives cannot help you. The third reason: even your body cannot help you. Which reads, when you die, it will be of no help. We are on page 317. When you die, it will be of no help if all the mountains turn to gold, and you will become turn and all become family. Quite apart from your wealth, possessions, relatives, you will have to leave behind your body, the things you call my body, which is born from the womb with you, which you protected from hunger and cold, which you wouldn't even dare prick with a thorn, and which you guarded and cherished like a wish-granting gem. As the Benjen Lama Chögyen has said, this body you so cherished and protected will prove deceptive when you most needed it. In other words, think about how you will be completely separated from even this body that you have so cherished and protected. Having thought over these three reasons, it does not help to stay afraid and depressed. As Khontan Rinpoche Denpe Dreme said, Dharma is the guide to the undeceiving path. Dharma supplies you for the long track. Dharma is your captain on the difficult journey. From this moment, practice Dharma with your three doors. J. Miller Rinpoche said, Ang Nyama Pedar Bum. That sounds like some kind of name. Listen, Lady of Wealth. It's a name of a lady. Listen, Lady of Wealth, you have faith. Have you enough supplies for the long road of future lives after this one? If you do not have enough supplies at hand, practice generosity. That will be your supply. Ang Nyama Bede Bum. Have you enough companions to face the great terrors in future lives after this one? If you do not have enough companions at hand, practice divine Dharma. That will be your companion. In other words, Dharma is your guide, captain, provisions for your journey when you die. If you have not practice Dharma, think on how poor your death will be, no different from that of an old stray dog in some alley. People going to visit their homeland do not make preparations for staying where they already are. They put all the energies into packing their luggages and nothing else. You too must also decide to practice the Dharma only, something untarnished by the obscurations of this life. Next section, next heading, meditation on aspects of death. This is an instruction from my precious guru. Although it mainly centers on how to pursue meditation on a practical teaching, it is said to be good to contemplate in this way. You should recall the things said in the earlier text, Compassionate Refuge, or Benjen Lama Lozen Chögyi Genzin's petition, made to be freed from the perilous road of the Partho. Examine just what will happen when you die. When you are approaching death, as it says in the Benjen Lama's petition for the Partho, when the doctor gives me up and rituals no longer work, when friends have given up hope for my life, when anything I do is futile, may I be blessed to remember my guru's instruction. In other words, the sickness gets worse despite proper medical treatment or rituals. The things the doctors tell you are not the things he's telling everyone else. Your relatives and friends tell you only nice things to your face, but get together in secret behind your back and agree that you will die. You display various nasty internal and external symptoms. Your body heat dissipates. Your breathing is labored. Your nose becomes constricted. Your lips are contorted. Your complexion is pallid, and so on. You regret your past sins, but you have not sufficiently expiated them, or refrain from repeating them, or practice virtue purely. Your fatal illness causes you suffering, and signs of progressive dissolution of the elements appear. Diverse terrifying hallucinations are blocking the immediate appearance of your present life. Your body aggregates. Your aggregates are rolled up in a blanket, put in the corner of your room and hidden behind a curtain. People light a cheap butter lamp for you, and if you are a llama or the like, they will dress you in your initiation costume to make you look presentable. You may now work hard to have a good house of warm, soft clothes and carpets, but you, when you die, your body will be folded in three trussed up with a leather strap left in New Gear and some other places where indigenous people of thousands of years lived there. To make themselves look gracious, they wear strange headdresses, like even skull cups on their head, his own sisters saying that amusingly. You may continue from the text. You may now work hard to have a good house or warm, soft clothes, carpets. But when you die, your body will be folded in three, trussed up with a leather strap left on the bare earth, rocks. On his son is talking. His son is just making a joke about a skull cup found from somewhere. At present, you may at present in our protector's chapels in the monasteries, we make we draw paintings of the human dry skin and human skull cups like that. That's like sort of terrifying people or making frightening up people. When we go into the main chapel, we are supposed to look at the Buddha's image with great peace of mind and through by remembering his teachings like that. Then on the other side, as we enter into the protector's chapel, it is deliberately made dark, and the deity spirits there, protectors live there, there are all like in fierce appearances. So we go enter them as in sort of in a feeling of fright, and that doesn't make much sense. At present, you may enjoy the most delicious food, but in the future, you will have to live. Or the smell of burned offerings made for the dead. At present, you may be called such nice things as geshe, sir, venerable monk. In the future, a time will come when your body will be called corpse and you will be called the late Mr. So-and-so. Whenever you lamas see your initiation costume, it should remind you that when you die, your remains will be decked out in it. When we see our blanket, it should remind us that our corpse will be wrapped up in it. This is how much remembrance we need. Jay Milarepa said, "The terrifying thing called corpse now lives in the channels, in the channels of the yogi's body. This is what the body is indeed." Page 321. His Holiness is on page 321. These things are discussed in the instruction given to the King Sutra. Gendun Tenzin Gyatso's Redhead Lamrim discusses how meditation on impermanence can be an antidote to getting fat at a time when you have access to magnificent clothes, goats, and so forth. Whenever you see your possessions, that is, your clothes and so forth, always think these are only masquerading as many things. there will become a time when people will divide them among themselves, and I don't doubt they will say, these belong to the dead person. I now cherish my body and I look after it, but a time will come when it will turn into what is called a corpse. If I were to see it then, I would be terrified. I would be nauseated if I touched it. It will be tied with a rope, and they will do all manner of things to it. Think how your leftover barley flours will be used in offering, how the rituals of introduction to the powder will be performed next to your head, and so on. Some of the people will handle your skull, saying, this is his skull, the quality is not too bad. Such a time is coming, and from now on you are to do things you will not regret. The criterion for having developed realization into death and impermanence in your mind stream is, if you want to be like Geshe, Kara Gumjung. Day 11. His only switches to Shamal Lamrim. Yachimadojas. Next section is on what will happen after death. One will either take rebirth in the lower realms or in the lower realms. That's right now we are in the Shamar Lamrim. So he's on this. The text is sort of discussing on as per my current way of behaving after death, there's only one way for me, that is to go into the lower realms, and how to prevent that, and that is by practicing Dharma and right from right now, without wasting any more time.
Yes, so I can hear you. I can hear His Holiness voice. So today seems to be the day of bad omen. So this morning there was no problem. So maybe the afternoon it seems there's some problem. So it seems to be the day of bad omen. So is everything okay now? Yeah. I can hear His Holiness clearly. So English translation is back. Thank you. We will resume. We are on Tibetan text page number 71. So it's thinking about the suffering and the happiness of the two realms, two lower realms. So what about those staying outside? So is it fine? Yes, the English section is fine. Is it confirmed now? So page number 70, Tibetan text. So we are on the outline of thinking about the sufferings of the lower realms. So here the suffering are again categorized into thinking about the sufferings of the hell realms. So I think I've already read it before. And also thinking about the suffering of the animals, thinking about the suffering of hungry ghosts. So first is thinking about the suffering of the hell realms. And hell realms are again categorized into 8 hot hells, 8 cold hells. So in terms of the hot hell, the intensity of the fire is so strong that it is thousands and millions of times stronger than the fire that we experience in our planet or in our world. In terms of the fire of the hell, so the fire that we experience or we have in this world is similar to snow or ice compared to the fire exists in the hell realms. And also the lifespan of the hell realms are already determined, and due to the past negative karmic actions, so they were born in the hell realms for a determined lifespan. And the lowest lifespan is the neighboring hell realms, which is again about 900,000 years. Also, the duration of the days and nights are different between our world and the hell. If we experience the similar intensity of the suffering on this planet, then there is no possibility that we could be able to survive even for a moment. So please, on the fan. So these, some of the fans over there are not working since yesterday. Are they not working? And also there are many fans not still on. I think they're feeling very hot, I can see that. So if there is fan, you must own it now. In the old prayer hall of the Gyumen Tantra College, it was so hot, and they turn on the fan, and the air is not coming. Later, they came to know that the fan was upside down. It was not fixed in the right way. That's why it was not working. So this is about the incident in Gyumen Monastery. To have same taste of every experience. And this is also the experience of not experiencing or not knowing the object. His Holiness is reading through the different categories of the hell realms. Now he's reading through the category of the black line. So if you own this fan or the Rinpoche's or head fan, maybe it may be disturbing Rinpoche. So in the black line hell realms, the guardians of the hell draw different lines over your body. The lines may be in 8 numbers or 16 numbers, and depending on the line, so they cut your body into different pieces using saws. And also there are many other guardians of the hell held with different weapons and different axes with fire on it and cutting through your body. And the lifespan of these elf realms are even severe. Is the fan on that side of the temple or not? I think there are no fans there. These fans will not turn on because the monks sitting down say they do not prefer it or they are not suitable for their health reasons, due to health reasons. So due to the one's own past negative karmic results, so we are the hell realm, the sentient beings are born in different categories of the hell, and also the intensity of the suffering is again determined or depend by the heavier and the lightness of the karma. So the negative actions are categorized into three: the small, medium, and the high or the great. So depending on these negative karmas or actions, one is born, one end up being result in different categories. They are born in the 8 hot hells and also the neighboring hells, depending upon one's own the karma which result in their being born in these hell realms. And one of the sutras, it is stated that due to not obeying the the rules and the promulgations of Vinaya. One is reborn, and there are different categories of the vows, and breaking of those vows result in different karmic results. So these karmic negative actions are considered as one of the main causes of being reborn in the hell realms. And also not practicing according to the teachings of the Bodh Sutra and Tantra, and especially those precepts that one we accepted during taking initiations. Due to that also, breaking of those precepts and commitments also result in being born in the hell realms. So we all beings are always engaged in some kind of prayers, and also try to abide by our commitments just for the sake of this life, the purpose of this life, but not for the next and the subsequent life. So from now onwards, we have to make sure that all our practices and the prayers were done for the sake of the next and the subsequent life. And also we have to think about the happiness for the long term. So His Holiness is reading through the hell of the great veiling. It is similar to the example of the chickens when they are being killed mercilessly, and they try to free themselves or lessen their suffering with taking out the furs and the feathers from their own body and placing it as their own mat in order to protect themselves from the suffering of the heat.
And put their head through the hole on top.
Hold on.
Veil and open their mouth, and then they put hot oil inside the mouth.
So when they pick off the fur of their body and open their mouth, so the hot oil or the water is being poured into their mouth. So this is an example recited here about the great hell of great veil. And those sentient beings who are born in the great heat of the hell realms, so they are even hotter than the earlier ones, as they are being boiled in huge vessels of copper from the head to toe. And at times all their bones and the fleshes get burnt and they have to run away within the vessels against crying and wailing with the sufferings and the pain. So once, then of course, it came to us that since all the flesh and the body parts are being taken away or being burnt, so then it's what is left is only the skeleton. So then how are they alive? So therefore, even though their body parts are all disintegrated, leaving only the skeleton, but they're still not dead, because there are many other sentient beings, for example, like the beings of intermediate state of rebirth, who also do not have the body of made up of flesh and the bones, still they suffer. They have to undergo the suffering. So similarly, in terms of the hell realms, who are born in the hot hells, have to undergo intense suffering, and all their body parts get disintegrated, leaving only the skeleton, but they are even not dead. So these are all the power or the nature of the karmic result, the karmic action that brought those beings to the hell realm. And the lifespan of those hell realms and the beings born there are said to be about half an eon. So next is the hell realms of where their bodies are. If we measure it, it can be about a few miles. So the body which are of few miles apart, and which are also happened within a moment without the needs of any further causes. And they're also again burned by fires from all four directions, and also from the top and bottom. And also the body itself becomes the nature of fire, and it will burn, leaving again only the skeleton. So these are some of the examples, illustrations of the sufferings that are being listed here. And so the hell realms, those beings who were born there, have to undergo such kind of serious sufferings for until the intensity or until the nature of their karma is exhausted. And some of the beings there have to automatically, they end of climbing the mountains of fire, so which are again the mountain of fires, and their hands and legs again get burnt. So the different categories of the hell realms are again due to, as earlier stated, due to the different negative karmas. So therefore, every day we end up accumulating immense number of negative actions. So therefore, we should be very mindful of our actions every day in and out, that our daily actions do not result in accumulating of the karma that will cause us to again reborn in these hell realms. And even as a human being also, it is important for us to think about these sufferings of the hell realms on our body, so that we can feel and all our actions in daily life can be more virtue. So next is the hell realm, the cold hell. The cold hell is said to be located in the northern side of the hot hell, about in the distance of about 10,000 miles. And those who are born in the cold hells, they also experience the suffering of heat when they are about to pass away from the cold hell and again reborn in another hell. So once they pass away from the other hell realms, then they also have to undergo, they also have to pass through the intermediate state of rebirth. And the intermediate state of rebirth, they experience receiving coldness as they are being wandering or going through the icebergs, where there are no sunlights and no any source, there aren't any source of heat. So they experience that they're being forced to walk through the great icebergs. And also the blowing of the winds from four directions, which bring hailstorms and are very cold. And this is one of the state of the cold health. And this is called the blister hell. Then again, due to the severe hell, so severe coldness that one experiences in the hell, one all the body get trembled, and the sound of atata comes from one's teeth and mouth. So that is another category of another realms of the cold hell called Atata hell. And also the color of the body also get also differs from different realms of health, from the blue color to red, and also very intense red. And in the cold realm, as we see in the winter time, when the earth's icebergs or the ice mountains, when it become extreme cold, they also get cracked. Similarly, they also their body and all the limbs also get cracked due to the extreme coldness. And also the cracks are developed in terms of the six number of cracks, or also 10 and also hundreds, so depend, and which result in all the body parts being cracked into different pieces. And that is why there's another category of hell realm which is known as the cracking like lotus, cracking like lily, and the great cracking like lotus. So these terms are given name after the nature of the suffering of their body. The lifespan of these different hell realms also differ from each other. So according to the Asanga, the cold hell realms and the hot hell realms have different lifespans, and among themselves also the lifespan get differ but different due to their own karmic results. So among them, the cold hell realm called the blister is said to be the shortest one in terms of the lifespan. But even that is very long time compared to our human rebirth. For example, in during our winter time, when there is snowfall and the ice, when the ice are developed, so we can experience how cold it is and how intensity, the intensity of the coldness, and we are not able to stay even for a moment outside in the snowfall. And if you stay for long, so one may get ill or even die out of the coldness. And also when it is snowing or icy outside, so we cannot walk barefooted. So if we all think about these real natures that we experience in our day-to-day life or during the winter especially, then the sufferings that we explain here in the cold health are even millions and billions of times more stronger and more severe than we experience here. And even though the causes, the karma, the causes of to be reborn in these hell realms are due to the 10 negative actions, but Geshe Nimsurwa, he is saying that the most severe and the most common the causes to be rebuilt in the cold realm is to steal what is being offered to the three jewels, for example, stealing of butter or the butter lamb, and also robbing the monk's robes. And also robbing the different households and their items. And these are said to be the causes of to be reborn in the cold hell realms. Then also lighting the prayer hall on, setting prayer hall on fire, and also burning alive a lot of animals are said to be the causes to be reborn, to get born in the hot hells. So in terms of that, from beginningless time until now, we have accumulated billions of the negative actions to be reborn in these realms. And now with this human rebirth, we must make we should be determined and make sure that we won't indulge in such negativities. So I think we will stop here for today. So it is impossible to finish this year.
Oh, yeah. Je ne sais pas si tu es un peu plus de temps. Kawan jada tupi jibo na tuzi kundi tuji chungwa Donan kumbu jinsi wangi siji jive chungwa Yonso jaji mela kanzin pe tisang tinti nyudu jawa su Nadung chini samay tinti da chusum tuji tudan tinti tong